Hello and a very warm welcome to the Racing Post Golf Postcast Masters Special. It's the greatest week of the year in the world of golf, and we're in good company this week, joined by three heavyweights of the golf punting scene. Joining me in the studio from the Racing Post, Ian Wilkerson, Jeremy Chapman, the man, the myth, the legend, joins us 77 years young, is Jeremy making his debut, and on the line, of course, our very own Steve Palmer. Right, let's talk last week quickly then. Wilco, you was in the chair, doing the chips. What happened in Texas?
Well, Corey Connors qualified on early in the week and got the job done and booked his place at Augusta. Had a bit of a wobble on Sunday, but managed to get over the line, played solid tee to green all week.
175-1. I mean, he'd missed practically every cut this year. He played one good tournament, hadn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
So it's an easy game, isn't it? 175-1, and there he is. He pops up.
And he's in the field. Takes his place
this week. Steve, did we learn anything from last week?
Last week, well, Corey Connors, very impressive. Made 10 final round birdies in quite difficult conditions. So, we've had our eye on him for a little while, and he's going places. He's played in the Masters before. He played as an amateur in 2015, missed the cut, but shot a second round 69. So, I think he'll sneak through the weekend this week. But last week, Jason Cockrack. I know we're almost obsessed with Cockrack on this podcast. But Jason Cockrack was seventh last week and playing consistently well. So once we get the Masters done and dusted, I think Jason Cockrack's going to be winning somewhere.
Marvelous. Right, that's enough of Texas, because let's move on to the big one, the Masters. Steve, do you want to provide us with a little bit of colour? I'm sure everyone out there listening knows what Augusta's all about, but it is that cauldron of pressure, one of the majors, one they all want to win. We've got a good field lining up, and as I say, it's the greatest week of them all.
Absolutely, yeah. I liked your intro there, because it's my favourite tournament of the year. I mean, it's an absolute gift for punters these days. You got a small field, lots of them are absolute no-hopers that you can put a line through straight away. There's only about 30 serious runners this week. You got reams of course form to go through, obviously the same course every year, and these ludicrously generous each way terms that the bookmakers are issuing. They're desperate to attract custom in the first major of the year, new customers that they can have for the rest of the majors season, and the each way terms, as I say, are crazy. So this is my favorite tournament. It's a great week to get heavily involved if you have the ability to do so.
Jeremy, what does it mean for you, the Masters? I'm sure you've seen many down the years.
I've seen many go back to 1969 and 70, Tommy Aaron. It means something. It's something I don't think should be a major championship, because it's an invitation tournament. Right. It's not a championship. And there are other tournaments that are much more worthy, like the Players' Championship, to be a major. So I don't agree that this should be a major. It's a tournament. 87 runners. As Steve says, about 30 of whom have got no chance at all. It's ceremonial golfers, the past champions. I mean, we love seeing Ian Woosnam and Sandy Lyle, but they are incapable of breaking par around there now. And, even good seniors like Bernard Langer and Fred Couples are struggling. I mean, Langer hits it 268. Well, now that the people in the field sitting at average 316 yards, it's a lot to give away.
What does it mean for you, Wilco? We've got to sit back on the sofa, kick back and it all unfold.
It's probably where I was probably fortunate, because the first Masters I remember watching was in 86 when Nicklaus won. So I'd have been about 13. And it just sort of like, and then it became like that Sunday tradition when there wasn't so much live sport on the television as there is now. It was a big weekend, often it would coincide with the Grand National or the FA Cup semi-finals and things like that. It was the biggest sporting weekend of the year. And I've fallen in love with it ever since. It's always a great spectacle. It's a wonderful scene. It's wonderful scenery and a wonderful place.
Look at it, it's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, they paint the water blue, and put dye in it to make it's all a bit pseudo, But it's wonderful to look at.
The lads have rightly mentioned, Steve, it's not a course that they tinker with too much, but that fifth hole has been extended by that extra 40 yards. What kind of difference will that make?
That's right, yeah. We're up to 7,475 yards now. And it's important to remember this is a very undulating course, very hilly. This is a long golf course. It's built for powerhouses. All I want on my team is powerhouses. You need long drivers, because they'll have more loft into their hands. they'll have more loft in their hands coming into the greens. I mean, this is a second shot course because strokes gained on approach is the stat I'm most interested in, because it's quite tiny targets on approach, and off the tee it's very generous. So if you get it out there, so long off the tee, accurate on approach is the key to success here. You don't have to be a particularly good putter, actually. The really difficult dance floors are a great leveler. Lots of very bad putters have won the Masters in recent years. So my advice for punters would be to focus on accurate approach play.
Would you agree with that, Will Carr? I mean, a course in which Bubba Watson's won twice tells me you want a bomber.
Well, yeah, I think it does. It helps having length off the tee, and it is not particularly that punishing if you do miss it. You've got to go, some of these fairways are so wide, they're almost impossible to miss. So that gives players the opportunity to get off the leash a bit and give it a whirl. Obviously, course experience does tend to play a massive role. Fuzzy Zeller in 1979 was the last debutant to win. Players do tend to need sort of three or four spins to get to grips with it. Admittedly, some in the past, Spieth finished second in his first year, but that goes against the grain, really. I think they really need to get to grips with it, two or three runouts before.
As you mentioned, Bubba Watson, because there are 48 players now who hit the ball over 300 yards on the PGA Tour, hard to believe. And of the previous 10 winners, he's the only one who'd actually say he's an out-and-out bomber. Yep. 313 yards, he gets it second only to Mr. Champ, Cameron Champ. But, I mean, Sergio hits it 300. He's on the last level of the 300 people, but most of the other ones hit it less than that. So out-and-out bombers don't necessarily do the business here, because Adam Scott, these sort of people, they're all good hitters, but they're not exceptionally long now.
Zach Johnson and Mike Weir are the only two. I mean, Zach Johnson and Mike Weir are the only two short hitters on the recent honours board, aren't they? I'd be loath to back anyone who doesn't send it over 300 yards.
Okay, right, interesting. Fair enough. Right, let's talk the betting then, because as Steve mentioned, do check with your bookmakers, because there are place terms up to 10 places out there. The Jolly is Rory McIlroy, a player who's lived on the leaderboard so far this year. He's about a 7-1 chance. Then Dustin Johnson, 10. Justin Rose, 14. Woods, 16. John Rahm, 18. Justin Thomas, 18. Ricky Fowler, 20. Jordan Spieth, 20. Molinari, 25. Brooks Koepka, 25. Paul Casey, 28. And Tommy Fleetwood in there at 30. A stacked betting board there, Steve, with all the big names lining up. And, we'll go straight into it. Who gets the Palmer mark this week? Who's your selection to win the 2019 Masters?
My number one selection is Hideki Matsuyama, who you didn't mention there because he's a bit further down the list. I think he's ready to become Japan's first major champion. He immediately fell in love with Augusta in 2011. He was a 19-year-old amateur back then. And he finished 27th. He was the only amateur to make the cut. Carr did a third round 68, which was hugely impressive effort so soon in his career. His Masters record as a pro is rock solid too. Two times he's turned up at Augusta really struggling with wrist problems. He's gone to post, effectively lame, 2014 and 2018. So you can disregard them. But in between those two renewals, his form figures were 5, 7 and 11. So tee to green, I think he's got this course completely sussed. He's one of the best iron players in the world. He's second on the US Tour strokes gained on approach stat, the one that I would advise punters to really focus on this week. So I see Matsuyama just destroying Augusta from tee to green. He's been a major champion in waiting for a while now. He's made a total of 25 major appearances, 14 top 20 finishes, second place in the 2017 US Open, top fives in the 2016 and 2017 USPGAs. So he's getting closer to that major breakthrough. Been playing consistently well for a long time now, 20 events without missing a cut. Finished third at Torrey Pines at the start of the year, eighth in the Players' Championship more recently. Last time out, it was the WGC match play. Finished second in his group, but he beat Dustin Johnson in his final match. Played really well to beat Dustin Johnson. And this is a class act. I think he's massively underrated in the market this week. He's won two WGCs by half the track. I mean, Chappers is talking about this not being a shouldn't be a major, like, you know, perhaps it is a weaker field than a lot of these events. The WGCs, everyone attends the WGCs, and Matsuyama has performed well in them. The final round 61 he produced in the Bridgestone Invitational to win that in 2017, won by 5 shots. One of the best rounds in US Tour history. When he gets in a groove, tee to green, Matsuyama is one of the very best. And I think a major victory this week would be a natural progression at the age of 27, given what he's achieved so far.
It's generally a 33-1 chance. I'll stay with you, Steve, because I just wanted to ask you about his temperament, because this is the biggest cauldron of pressure going, the Masters. Would he stand up to it come Sunday?
Well, he had a big chance in the USPGA a couple of years ago, and the pressure got to him on the Sunday. He came into that in absolutely splendid form, obviously with the Bridgestone victory before, and was very well fancied. And I think a little bit more under the radar this year, as reflected by the betting. And I think the atmosphere of the Masters really helps him. You know, he traditionally has like an army of frenzied Japanese photographers and media men following him. But the Masters is a completely different vibe. They're not allowed in between the ropes. It's players, caddies and officials only. There's no mobile phones. It's a very unique atmosphere. And I think Matsuyama will thrive in that. You talk about his character. He's an absolute cool dude. You know, he's a really calm, calculated killer. You know, I'd have no problems with Matsuyama in the mix on Sunday. I can see it now, him in the butler cabin on Sunday being presented with the green jacket. I'm quietly confident about this one.
Brilliant, great case made for Matsuyama from Steve. As I say, generally a 33-1 chance. Jeremy, I've read your splendid preview in this week's Racing and Football Outlook, and I see that you're quite keen to keep the Europeans on side this week.
I think we've got a great chance. I mean, the whole five from Europe. We've won 5 times on the PGA Tour this year with Gray McDowell winning the other week, because he doesn't play this week. But, Rose won, McIlroy won the big one. I can't see us not being in the shake-up. We may get beaten, but I think we've got so many darts to fire. We must go very close to winning it again. We won it 2 of the last 3 years with Danny Willett, poor fella, and Sergio, of course, finally got over the line thanks to my selection here, Justin Rose, fading on the last couple of holes. He was one ahead with 2 to play, should have won that year. And he's got to take his revenge on the course. He's been twice second in the last 4 years. He's absolutely classic, isn't he? You're guaranteed that he's going to play well. Must be top 10 at worst, Rose, and people playing 10 places, 14-1, I think. Twice the price of the favourite, and I can't think why. It could be he's ahead of McIlroy in the world rankings, and he's current form is every bit as good as his, so I think that's a reasonable price. Not fantastically generous, but it's a lot more generous than 7-1 for McIlroy.
So you're going with Justin Rose. That's the biggest dart of all.
That's the main.
He's a bit of a European team in the RFO, but the main tip from Jeremy is Rose. We'll get the rest of your team after we hear from Wilco. Who gets the tick mark from Wilco?
I really like Louis Oosthuizen this week. I've been singing his praises for the last couple of weeks, and I really think he's primed for a good challenge. He lost to Bubba in 2012, but he's got a solid Augusta record, and he's playing some good stuff. He was strong in South Africa at the turn of the year, which you would expect as one of their leading lights, playing against perhaps lesser opposition. But he's done well. He's played pretty well over the other side of the Atlantic as well in the last few weeks. He was second at the Valspar and played very well at the match play. Should have beaten the winner, Kevin Kisner. He was ahead on the 16th tee of their game in their quarterfinal, and he should have got over the line. He had 33 birdies that week. So his game.
Are you worried that he's never won in the States before, though?
I think, you know, he has competed at this level, and I think at the prices, I think they're 40-1 that's available about him. I think that's generous. He's got the requisite length. He's a decent player around the greens as well. If things don't, you know, quite go regulatory, he doesn't, you know, if he misses the odd green, that's not going to faze him too much. He's fourth in strokes gained around the green.
He's got a swing to die for, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's playing really well.
Swings.
Yeah, and he's been in the top 20 in 3 of the last 4 years at Augusta. And I really think that he could be in for a bold show.
Okay. 40-1.
40s.
Big Louie. Right, I'll come back to you, Steve. And Steve, I must apologise because at the top of the show, I should have mentioned big 5-0, Patrick Reid last year, back of the net. What can I say? It was never really in doubt either, was it?
No, it was good fun last year. It was it was good fun watching the final round. Reid rappelled a lot of good players there. Really exciting final round. But I'm hoping for Hideki Matsuyama to play a similar role this year.
So outside of Matsuyama, who else is in the team this week?
Next best is John Rahm. John Rahm's been on my radar for this all year. We did a podcast at the start of the year where we had long-term predictions for all the majors, and Rahm was my idea of the likely Masters winner, and he's not done anything to put me off this year, really. This is the major which suits him best. You know, it's a low-scoring contest, suits aggressive, swashbuckling players like him. He finished 27th on his debut there 2 years ago, and then last year, despite opening with a 75, he finished fourth. He outscored everybody in the field over the final three rounds. So to suggest he's really got a handle on Augusta now. He's certainly got a handle on the par fives. He's made an eagle. He's only played there twice. He's made an eagle at three of the four par fives. It's only the 15th that he's not conquered yet. And since the Ryder Cup, he stepped up a level. He's always had a swagger, but since beating Tiger Woods in the Ryder Cup singles, I think his confidence level is through the roof now. He won the Hero World Challenge by four shots in December, had a good chance at Sawgrass, led going into the final round. Essentially only one bad course management decision cost him there when he went for the green from the fairway bunker on the 11th. But there's no holes in his current form. He's over that Sawgrass incident now. Four solid rounds at the Valspar, played okay in the WGC. So of the market principles that you mentioned at the start of the show, Rahm is the most appealing.
Did you want to jump in, Jeremy?
He's my next best as well. I'm a great fan of John Rahm. I mean, he's touched with genius. I mean, he's going to win umpteen major championships for me. I mean, it wouldn't be surprising. I don't think he's putting very well at the moment. That's my only worry. He seems to miss more than his share of six-footers to me, but that's my only concern. And, he made some bad decisions, as Steve said, at Sawgrass. He should have done better there. So he's not the finished article, but he's getting there.
Steve, I just wanted to ask, because obviously I asked about Matsuyama's temperament, cool as a cucumber. Not quite the same can be said about John Rahm.
No. And that's why I prefer him for this major than any of the others, because he's not going to get many setbacks here. You know, the weather forecast is decent. This is a low scoring contest. He's going to be making birdies and eagles. He's going to put a spring in his step straight away. I think you're right. I worry about his temperament when things are going wrong. On tougher courses, you know, US Open, Open Championship, and Sawgrass, really. Yeah, you wouldn't expect him to do well at Sawgrass. I thought that was fantastic form. He finished 12th in the end, but as I say, that was just down to one sloppy course management error, and then he was going pin hunting at 17 when he was a long way behind. So I thought his Sawgrass effort was fantastic form on a course that doesn't really suit him very, very well. So, I wouldn't worry about his temperament. I think he's going to get off to a good start this year, and I think he'll have his tail up throughout.
Wilco, what about yourself? Who joins Big Louie?
Well, I would endorse what both gentlemen have said about John Rahm. I mean, the temperament would be my worry, but I think he's the ones at the top of the list. You know, he's the one I'd like best. But going a bit further down, I like Bubba Watson this week. We've talked about his qualities and length off the tee. I mean, he's been playing solidly as well. Since the PGA in August, he's missed just one cut, so that's 14 goes, and although he was disappointing at the Players where he finished 56, you know, bounced back fourth at the Valspar last time. He obviously loves it round Augusta. He's won there twice, and this year's efforts have come on the back of an excellent 2018 when he claimed three successes. I think he was fifth last year, and he's missed the cut only once in 10 goes round Augusta. I think flying a little bit under the radar with such a packed.
People think because
I really think, yeah, you know, he's about 33-1.
Yeah, 33s.
Yeah, I think he's got a great each way chance.
Marvellous.
People think he's not very straight because he's a very eccentric looking swing. It's his own swing. He's self taught, but he's a very straight hitter, isn't he?
But he's an amazing golfer, isn't he?
Oh, he's a genius. He's another Seve Ballesteros. He takes the game to another level. He's on a different planet to everybody else. And often it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, but I really think, you know, that there's plenty of each way mileage in that price.
I just want to hear him shout mud ball again, because that's one of my favourite golf moments of all time. Steve, you've put up two. Will you be putting any more up at big prices, or is it just the two this week?
I got four against the field if you want.
Yes, the other two. Yeah, the other two.
I must continue the Bubba Watson love in. I agree. I think he is under the radar this week. I think he should be a shorter price. Adores Augusta for many reasons. I mean, technically, many holes at Augusta, well, most holes at Augusta set up perfectly for him. That, the left-hander with the power fade is the dream ticket for most holes at Augusta. The par fives are at his mercy. And he loves the atmosphere of this event. I mean, Bubba is a peculiar character. Easily ruffled by the galleries in regulation events. But as I said before, he hasn't got to worry about the atmosphere of the Masters, the patrons, as they like to call them. The patrons are impeccably behaved. No mobile phones allowed on the course, just players, caddies and officials inside the rope. So this is Watson's favourite event. I can see him completing a Masters hat-trick. I mean, a lot of people think he perhaps not an elite player, but if he completes a Masters hat trick, he's a Hall of Famer. And there's no obvious reason why Watson won't contend again. And his recent form is good enough. He won three times on the US Tour last year, three US Tour titles. This year's going well. Fourth in the Valspar, very recent performance. Fourth in the Valspar. So Watson has to be in the staking plan. And my final one, which nobody seems to fancy him apart from me, but Adam Scott. Adam Scott is the 2013 Masters champion. He was also second in 2011. He relishes Augusta. He's one of the best ball strikers in the world. He's got the perfect tee to green game for Augusta. He hits a very comfortable hit and a draw, obviously right-handed a draw, which is a good shot shape for Augusta. And crucially this season, he's found a way of getting the ball in the hole. He's always been superb from tee to green, but he's 14th in the US Tour strokes gained putting stats this season. 14th. I mean, that's a staggering statistic for a player who's been struggling on the greens for so long. And it's almost certainly the 2019 rule change that's brought it about. I mean, you're allowed to putt with the flag stick in now. The vast majority of professionals are saying, oh no, I'll stick to what I know, I'm going to take the flag out. But Adam Scott is putting almost permanently with the flag stick in, and that could be a very sneaky little edge at Augusta. When you're standing over those slippery downhill 5-footers, you got to dribble at the hole, but Scott can putt a lot more positively than the rest of the field perhaps, because he's got that backstop of the flag stick. So potentially Scott could have a significant edge this week. I think Bryson DeChambeau is the other one, the only other player who will putt with a flag stick in the majority of greens. So, Scott's been playing great this year. He was runner-up at Torrey Pines. He was third in the last major, the USPGA. He's really got his act together. So, I think Adam Scott's a sneaky one this week. And I'd put him alongside Bubba Watson, Hideki Matsuyama and John Rahm.
Complete Palmer's team. Interesting angle that, Jeremy, with the flag stick in.
Yeah, I think they have to change all the rules about course records, because the game's become easier with this. It's been proven, the stats prove that it's easier to play score well with the flag stick in than taking it out. So I think more players are taking it out than are not taking it out. I see more than those two that Steve mentioned. So I think that quite a lot of them are doing it. And it is easier. It makes the game easier.
Especially on the quick greens at Augusta.
On the women's thing the other day, we saw people putting from 2 feet with the flag in. Well, that would frighten me.
Who completes your team then?
I'm a Watson man. Six Masters winners this century have been left-handers. That's a very high statistic. Three from Mickelson, one from Weir and two from Watson. So it's a course that favours left-handers for some reason. I don't know why. The shape of the holes, maybe. And I'm putting in Molinari, even though he's not got a sensational record on the course, but I would say that he's not the same Molinari who was not done so well there. He's a changed man, totally different golfer now that he's won the Open, and he's won on the States, in the States for the first time, had a wonderful Ryder Cup. He's a totally different golfer now, and I think he'll improve on his record of not being better than 19th before. And finally, one from left field, I feel like I'm up for being humiliated, but I'm put up Jordan Spieth.
Spieth?
Jordan Spieth, the man who can't putt for toffee. He's definitely got the tremor. I mean, they all say he's got the tremor and he's got the yips. But I watched very carefully last week, and he made 18 birdies and an eagle, and he putted rather well. What we saw on TV, we didn't see him all the time because he wasn't in contention. But I think he might surprise people. He's got the best stroke average at Augusta, and going back to a course where he has won one Masters and should have won two more in only five visits. I think it's a decent sort of punt.
Well, I quite like him for first round leader, but we'll come on to that a little bit later on. Wilco, anyone else? Tip of your fancy?
I mean, we've talked about a lot of... we'll go through the main contenders as well in a second. One European player, I think, who I just think is a big price, is a player who was fifth last year. He's had his ups and downs. It's Henrik Stenson. I think at 70-1, he's just too big for the price. I think when we get to the majors now, because it is so stacked at the top of the game, I do think that there's so much quality in the top sort of 10 or 12 in the betting that I do fancy every week that one of them's going to turn up and get the job done. But I just think at 70-1 is a big price for a class operator. He's not won since August 2017, but he's fought his way through a disappointing start of the year where he missed three successive cuts in the Middle East. But I just think 70-1 for a class operator is too big a price.
Marvellous. Right, that is everyone's selections, but we must whiz through those leading the way in the betting. And Steve, we've not mentioned Rory at all really yet, chasing that career Grand Slam. He's a very short price to get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, the Racing Post podcast, obviously, maybe the only place where he's going under the radar. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on Rory this week. That it's the most elite club in golf, Grand Slammers. Only five have done it in the history of this grand old game. And I just worry that he perhaps wants it a little bit too much. You know, this is the final piece of the jigsaw. He's obviously led at Augusta before in 2011 and had a final round meltdown there. Last year, he had a golden chance, got off to a good start and then succumbed to Patrick Reed and drifted away quite meekly. So, yeah, the form is there. He's played really well this year, arguably better than he's ever played this year. Really consistent Rory McIlroy. It's just a big psychological hurdle to complete the career Grand Slam. And I just think at the price, 7-1, no bigger than 7-1, I'm not prepared to trust him.
Fair enough. Next one down, Jeremy, is DJ, Dustin Johnson. Why is he not in the team?
Why is he not in the team? Well, he's not really challenged for the Masters. I mean, he hasn't won fourth, I think, his best he's done, but he never threatened to win on any occasion. It's just, I just don't feel he's going to win the Masters. I don't think that's going to be his tournament.
Fair enough.
Lots of talk about Augusta suiting somebody who's more prone to draw the ball rather than fade, and that probably doesn't, tick a box for him. Although he's been in the top 10, in his last three efforts. He had that gap when he fell down the stairs and then didn't play. So I think it's, people might say, oh, well, he doesn't play Augusta particularly well. I wouldn't really agree with that, but I think it's a price issue, really. I don't think...
He's only won one major, any guys. And he's no spring chicken. I mean, he's 35 in June. He turns 35 in June, still only won one major. So I just thought Dustin was a bit short this week. McIlroy and Johnson obviously can win. It'd be mad to rule them out. But, yeah, we're here to identify value, and I think they're both a touch short.
What about the Cat, Steve, chasing that fifth green jacket? I mean, he's not too big a price either. He's fourth in with most bookmakers. What are your thoughts on Tiger Woods?
Yeah, I mean, it broke my heart having to leave him out the staking plan. I mean, I'd love to see him win. I'm staring at a picture of him now on the wall there, winning his last major. I got a picture of him winning his last US Open.
Over 10 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like only yesterday, didn't it? But, I had to leave him out. Again, on value grounds, not quite big enough price to tempt me. I mean, his Augusta record is great, but it's very old form. His last top 10 there was 2013. He will contend. I think he'll contend because his iron play is arguably still the best in the business with irons, and that is the key to Augusta. So I think he'll contend, but his putting, he's had a cold putter this year. And like McIlroy, I mean, McIlroy and Woods are the two players that are, they've got the weight of history on their shoulders here. I mean, even Woods, even Woods, you know, the killer that he is, at the age of 43, not quite as good a putter as he once was. I think the pressure of the Jack Nicklaus hunt will tell on Sunday. But yeah, I think he'll finish sixth. I think Tiger. if you want a prediction, I mean, I got my four against the field, and then there were two others that were really close to selection. Tiger Woods and Justin Thomas were the two that narrowly missed out on making a staking plan.
Well, he's the next one down on the betting list, Jeremy. Justin Thomas. Many people feel he's tailor-made for Augusta. Not for you?
I like him very much, but no, I'm not don't think he's quite at his best of form at the moment. Right. Going back to Tiger, it's worth remembering that he hasn't won the Masters for 14 years. It's a long time. He's more History Channel than Sky Sports.
I think, well, with Tiger as well, like five tournaments. He's played five tournaments since the start of the year. I'd want a bit more form in the book, I think. Particularly when there's been so many questions about his fitness over the last couple of years. I think the fact he's played five tournaments since the turn of the year, I'd want to see a bit more.
He did swerve in action a little bit more. 3 or 4 weeks ago, didn't he, for injury?
Mm. He had a neck problem. And he's 30 his last time out. I can't really see why he's not 25-1, to be honest. It's a long time, and he's 43, as Steve says. He's not as good as he was, and the big thing is that the other people aren't scared of him anymore. That's a big issue. I mean, lots of those 80-odd wins have been because people have given it to him, yeah, because they're frightened of seeing him in the rear window.
The charge up the leaderboard, that fear's not there anymore for you, Jeremy, no?
Not there.
Right, the final player I want to talk about is Ricky Fowler, who finished runner-up
last year.
Dug out a stat. Ricky Fowler, 34 majors into his career without a win, Steve. Why is that?
Well, temperament, I guess. He's been really unlucky. Good players have beaten him. He's 30 years old now, so he's still got plenty of time to get over the line in front. Ricky was on my mind a lot for this until he entered the Texas Open last week. I mean, Augusta sets up well for Fowler. Finished runner up there last year. Fantastic final round. Gutsy birdie up the last when he thought he had a good chance of winning. I just thought playing the Texas Open last week was a crazy scheduling decision. I mean, what benefit could be gained from that? I know he likes to play before majors, but the Houston Open used to be ahead of the Masters in the schedule, and the Houston Open was mirrored Augusta in many respects. It was a good warm-up event, but the Texas Open isn't a good warm-up event. The weather was a bit horrible on Sunday. It was just a pointless waste of energy, so that's why I axed Fowler from my plans. So as I say, Justin Thomas, who we haven't mentioned, and Tiger Woods are the two that I'd be most disappointed to see win. Well, not Tiger. I'd love to see Tiger win. I'd be an emotional wreck, but in terms of betting, those two would hurt me because it was quite hard to scrape from the staking plan. Justin Thomas is greens and regulation stats at Augusta. He's played there three times. He's improved his finishes each year, found loads of greens and putted poorly. So if Thomas has a half decent putting week, I think he'd be banging the mix. But he had a sort of messy March. His form's dipped a little bit. So I went with Rahm instead. So it was between Thomas and Rahm for that last spot, and Rahm got the nod.
Okay, right, there are plenty of weird and wonderful specials. We'll whiz through some of them. We've mentioned sort of the top 10 or so in the betting from each of you. All the firms have priced this market up to miss the cut. If you was to back one of the players in the top 10 betting, which one would it be to miss the cut you think is going to have a poor week? Steve?
I will urge punters to read the Racing Post pullout on Wednesday or online at racingpost.com at 8 p.m. because I'm a bit behind on the other markets. I've only just been focusing on the outright market, so I can't give any confident selection on this. But I know Chappers has got a hunch for Jordan Spieth this week, but I think of the names at the top of the betting, Spieth could easily miss the cut. I think his game, it's not just his putting. I mean, his driving, his 20 handicap of stuff at the moment. And I wonder whether Spieth might have his first Augusta Miss Cup.
Good course for bad drivers, though, Steve, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you do well around there, Chappers.
Who are you thinking to be against this week?
I'd be against a two-time winner of a major last year, Brooks Koepka, because I don't think he's playing very well.
And simple as that.
I just don't think he's going to figure at all.
Saves his best for the majors. I think he's won three of his last six, has he?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to win this one. I might be wrong.
It'd be a fair price to miss the cut anyway. Wilco, one to be against?
Well, I mean, it's pretty hard to miss the cut because so many players get through and there's a 10 shot rule in operation.
It's
this
50,
week.
It's 50 plus ties.
So we've got 87 runners, we've got 50 plus ties. You're really going to have your work cut out not to make the weekend, aren't you? So
I'm still going to push for an answer, though, I'm afraid.
I think I do like most of the players at the top of the leaderboard, but unlike Steve, I'd be a bit concerned about Thomas's recent form, not really coming on great. And he made the point about Ricky Fowler playing at Texas, who he faded pretty poorly over the weekend after an encouraging start. Didn't play particularly well with the players or the Honda Classic before that.
Fowler makes too many double bogeys for
Okay, then if I stuck my neck out, I'd say Ricky Fowler.
You need with a gun to your head, Wilco. I agree with you. I think it's not missing the cut is not a market to get heavily involved in because, as Wilco says, you've got all those ceremonial golfers, all the old timers that are older than
places.
They're older than Jeremy Chapman, and they're going to post in the Masters. So we need to be careful with miss the cut wages because you can play terribly and still sneak through.
Right, fair comment, Steve. Right, quite partial to a first round leader wager myself in this one. And I quite like Spieth. We spoke before we started rolling here, Wilco, that you're quite keen on him as well. His first round
I think this is
decent.
I think this is where I'd be inclined to get with Spieth as opposed to the outright market because he's obviously, he's had well-documented travails over the last few weeks and his game is not in particularly good shape, but it's the inconsistency of his game that's been the problem. And he's been getting off to some really good starts. In five of his last nine rounds, 68 or fewer, he carded a 65 at the Farmers, 66 at Pebble Beach, 64 at the Genesis. He was 68 last week at the Texas Open. So although his results have not been brilliant, it's taken a little bit of time during the week until he had a mad nine holes, didn't he, on Saturday?
First nine.
42. Oh. And then he had 31 on the way back. I mean, we've all had a few 42s, but none of us have had a 31 back, have we? And so it's the consistency over four rounds that would put me off. His, as the boys have already said, his Augusta record is outstanding. And he has been top... first round leader in three of the last four goes, 22-1, with some big each way prices. There's some firms to eight places. I think that would be the way that I'd go to get with him this week.
Jeremy, will it be a Spieth Cabrera 1-2 after the first round?
No, I go for Charlie Hoffman actually.
Right, okay, yeah, he's a favourite as well.
We love Charlie on here. Don't
40-1 to be first round leader, I believe. That's a fair price. He's done it before in this one.
Yeah.
Always quick out the traps. Steve, I'm assuming we'll save yours for the pull-out?
John Rahm. I think John Rahm will make a fast start this year. I think the fact he shot 75 last year, yet still finished fourth, will relax him. You can shoot 75 on the open day and contend. I think psychologically he'll be going into that first round nicely relaxed. It's not been long. So, he's played a lot of tournaments recently. His swing is nicely grooved in. I think Rahm of my four selections is the one that's going to make the fastest start.
Just one fact on here. The last 18 players who have been either first round leader or tied first round leader, only four of them teed off before 10:30. So that might be something. I mean, it's not quite as bad because of the smaller field. You won't quite get the discrepancies with the weather that we get for the Open and events like that when people are teeing off at 6 o'clock in the morning and some people are teeing off at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But that might be something to look forward to. But late starters have done particularly well.
Has anyone kept an eye on the weather at all?
It's going to be wet at the start of the week. It's probably raining now. I don't know, but there is some rain forecast for Friday.
Oh, okay.
Overcast week rather than very sunny, I think. Yeah.
Overcast. Right, hole in one, Wilco. I know you've got a strong view on this one. Generally about an 8 to 13 shot.
Yeah.
To be at least one hole in one anywhere on the course. But you've got a different angle.
Well, yeah, the firms, obviously, the market is littered with hundreds of specials for the biggest golf tournament of the year. So, but the one I like is for a hole in one to be at the 16th. As you say, 8 to 13 generally that... there's an ace during the 4 days, but 13 and the last 14 holes in one have come at the 16th hole and have been five there in the last 3 years.
Big stat.
Now, the only other one was Jamie Donaldson. He got one on the sixth in 2013. So I really like that one. You can get, I think somebody had 13 to 10 on it happening on Sunday, because as with if you're familiar with it, there's the pin placement at the bottom of the hill, so they hit it onto the ledge and then it rolls down. And but 6 to 5 generally, that there is one on the 16th. If you're looking for a hole in one bet, that's the way to go.
Absolutely agree with that.
Steve, any thoughts on that one? Big nod from Jeremy.
Yeah. They're always peppering the pin at 16 when the pin's in the lower half of the green there. I think Adam Scott's got a good chance of getting a hole in one this week. Yeah, get a price on Adam Scott getting a hole in one. Hits it lovely high, nice drawn irons into that pin down the lake there. So yeah, find a bookmaker to give you an Adam Scott hole in one price and thank me on Monday.
good stuff. Right, before we wrap up everyone's selections, anything else catch the eye? Anything to have on side? Any wagers, Jeremy?
Top amateur, quite like top amateur. A Norwegian, the first ever Norwegian to play in the Masters. A chap called Victor Hovland. Victor Hovland. He's 9-4 favourite for top amateur, 6 amateurs in it. He's the US amateur champion, and he won every single match in the US, all 6 matches, by huge margins. When he won it, so I think he's a bit special. And there's a good Japanese player in that whose name escapes me, but I think that Hovland is quite a decent. He was 40th when he was invited to Bay Hill the other day for the Arnold Palmer, and he finished ahead of people like DeChambeau and Patrick Reed, so he's obviously can play a bit. And he was 13th as an amateur when he played in the Australian Open last year, so decent player, I think. Going to do Norway proud.
I like that one. First Norwegian to ever take part. Wilco, anything else?
I'd agree. I'd see Jeremy's put up his old friend Bernhard Langer to be top German at odds against. I really like that bet as well. I think he's up against Martin Keimer, who's notorious for his poor form around Augusta. Doesn't like the track. Absolutely. Langer will not have to play brilliantly to get on top.
The trouble is, Langer only hits it 268. Yeah. Now he's 62 in August, for goodness sake.
Well, odds against, I think that's it.
268 isn't. He's going to struggle to make it on some of these holes now. You know, his 2 weeks.
He stayed at your house once, didn't he, Chappers? You want to tell that story?
More than once, yes. He came.
We got a spare half hour for this one?
Very quickly, Jeremy. Very go on, Rock.
Well, I met him at Fulford in a tournament in the North, and he was pulling his own trolley and looking very forlorn, and he was yipping it from 3 feet, not touching the hole. I took pity on him and said, if you're ever playing in the South, give us a call and you can stay with us, because my wife's German and you'll feel at home with the cooking. So he turned up one day without phoning anybody, knocked on the door. My wife thought he was a carpet sweeper, and something on his back, and said, your husband said I could stay with you. So she rings me up office and said, what's all this? I've got a German bloke called Langer on the front step. Says he's going to stay with us this week. Oh, I said, yeah, I forgot to tell you, I invited him. I thought he might have rung first, but he used to stay with us before he became famous. In his early days on the tour, before he won his first tournament, he stayed with us a couple of times, yeah.
Incredible. Langer the legend, Lodger. Right, OK, let's wrap up everyone's selections then. We'll go to you first. Wilco, you like Big Louis Oosthuizen?
Yeah, I like Oosthuizen. Love Bubba as well. With Steve on Rahm and bit of an each way poke on Stenson.
European team for you this week.
Yeah, I forgot to mention one of my team, Paul Casey. Paul Casey, I love Paul Casey. I think he's very happy in his domestic life. He just looks. I mean, he's the same age as Mark O'Meara was when he won his first major at the Masters in 1998. And, you know, he's playing the best of his career, I think, at the moment. He won an American tour this year in Valspar and just plays very, very well. I don't fancy him to win because he gets the shakes on the last day, doesn't he? But, no, I think he's going to play very well. And Molinari, I can see him going close. And Rahm, yeah, they're my four there, yeah.
Along with Rose leading the way. And Steve, final word with you, Matsuyama. Why should we be with him?
Yeah, Hideki Matsuyama, absolute dude of a player. His time has come at the age of 27 years of age, the most famous son from the land of the rising sun. Best bet of the week. Do you want best bet of the week? I mean, that's what we normally wrap up these podcasts with. It is my best bet of the week would be a
Whoa, you're going to have to sing it, Steve. You can't just go straight in. We can just grab a little quick line. Come on.
You want a song, dear?
Yes, definitely. Here we go.
We're turning Japanese. I think we're turning Japanese. I really think so. There you go. You weren't expecting that, were you? He was expecting the old classic, but I think that's more appropriate. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Matsuyama each way is the best bet of the week. And then Rahm, Scott and Watson are good options too.
Excellent. Right, marvellous stuff. Thanks for your expertise, Steve. Follow Stevie, of course, bagged Patrick Reed last year at 50-1. The fountain of knowledge that is Jeremy Chapman making his debut in the studio. We thank you. And Wilco as ever. Good stuff from the guys. That's about all the time we have for. Look out for our racing and football podcast as well this week. Good luck at Augusta.